afternoon. You're joining the second hour of We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power.
You like got into that right before I could interrupt you.
I know. I jumped
on
it so
good.
So this wouldn't happen, but it obviously didn't work. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. And you can find them at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just off I-5, south of Phil's Propeller. And they're a full-line dealer, parts, service, sales. They do it all there. You can reach them on the web at readingtractors.com or give them a call at 226-9226.
And do not mow when it's hot out.
Please don't mow.
Yeah, stop doing that.
It's not mower season, although they will sell you a mower right now if you want to go out and start a, mow.
Start a fire?
Yeah.
You were going to say that, didn't you?
Yeah, you could start a fire right now if you want.
Or you could just mow your grass, water your lawn, and then mow that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's always good.
And the mowers are very reasonably priced. They're anywhere from $300 up to $2,000. And then you'll want to get about a $3 million retainer for when you do go out and mow this time of year. So
I was going to say, when you mow your field and you hit some rocks and start a giant fire, it's not going to be that cost-efficient.
Yeah, it's not going to be a good deal. But, yeah, Team Power. Yeah, I thought.
We could have done the Smokey Bear commercial, but what is he? He's not Smokey the Bear anymore. Now he's Smokey Bear?
Smokey Bear,
That's stupid. He's Smokey the Bear.
His middle name is The.
Yeah, his middle name is The. Okay. Well, now that we've really gone off the rails.
Yeah, we have.
See, that's why they have that disclaimer. The disclaimer makes me want to go off the rails. It's forcing me to. I don't know why, but it just makes me want to act out. Okay, everything makes me want to act out. I have sexual harassment training this week. I'll be sure and tell you guys next week how that turned out.
Yeah,
doing the training.
Good thing they have insurance.
So our guest this hour and last hour with William Kay, we're talking about population control, but we met him because he runs a site called ecofascism.com. And so, of course, we always like to delve into the environmental stuff. And so we've had him on a number of times about that, a variety of topics. And then here in February, this is, June 24th, 2018 today, in case we replay this show at a different time. You're not time traveling. In February of this year, we did a program with him. He had a history of popular time travel, I was going to say. Good God. History of the population control movement from 1798 to 1998. So fairly comprehensive. This isn't, just during the Obama administration or something goofy like that. And that's all posted on the website as well, and really good information. So if you're hearing, like I always hear, population control is a myth, or it's not really happening, or, it's a conspiracy, blah, blah, blah. It's super happening and very, very well documented. So you could go do your own research, or you could just follow behind William, because he is a researcher extraordinaire. He lives in Alberta, Canada, so he's one of our friends from up there. Yeah. Who's not a crazy socialist.
I think we're still friends.
All the other crap.
We're going to burn down the White House again.
That's exactly it. I was totally laughing when Mark Stein went on that rant with Tucker Carlson here a couple weeks ago. I'm like, I'm so glad we're having William on. That's what made me think of you. It made me laugh. Okay, so the book, where does the book pick up? Because your subtitle is A Primer on the Population Control Movement. Okay.
Part one is the history, 1798 to 1998. I added a few extra chapters to that. And then part two is the modern movement. It profiles the main organizations that are currently active in the movement and what the movement is up to now. Now, you mentioned before we broke about, what is motivating these people, and are they not worried
about getting rid
of everybody? The most extreme population controller I've come across is Ted Turner, and he has repeatedly said he wants to reduce the world's population to 100 million.
Yeah, what's Ted Turner up to?
It's probably
now,
just
yeah.
all that time he spends
oh,
with
he is,
Fonda.
He's one of the main bankrollers of it. He set aside $1 billion of his own money to found a group called the UN Foundation, and it ingratiates itself to all of the main UN agencies, and it continues to draw funding from the other philanthropic organizations, but it's a major player in the population control movement. They are still handing out tens of millions of dollars a year, and they have carefully and cleverly positioned themselves as sort of a hub within the movement. I mean, this is a movement. There is no central organization. But his organization is a real player in it, and he's quite fanatical about reducing the world's population. You don't get a lot of that. You get a lot of sort of, you know, zero population growth and freezing population. There is a group in the U.S. called Negative Population Growth. They've got about 25,000 members. They're not a large organization, but you come across, there's another group in Holland called
the
10 Million Foundation. What's that?
I said, I'm getting smaller every day. Sorry.
But one of the, a lot of the leaders of this movement, they're having big families. I mean, they're not talking about them shrinking. They're talking about other people shrinking.
Oh.
There's also a Dutch group that wants to cut the Dutch population in half. So you do find a lot of these, some of these groups are quite explicitly saying they want to shrink the world's population. Most of them say they just want to sort of freeze the world's population. None of them are talking about absolutely. Well, there's a few extreme groups who want to get into it that are calling for completely wiping out the human population. I've come across three or four of them, but they are like complete whack jobs that aren't really, they're not
literally
significant enough. What's that?
Literally.
Yeah.
Your choice of words is,
well, the voluntary human extinction movement. There's several groups like that out there. They're absolutely genocidal fanatics. People should really keep an eye on some of those groups. They are quite capable of extreme violence. So they're out there as well, but they do not play any significant role, I do think, in the overall movement. You know, the big players in the movement are like the World Bank and the United Nations Population Fund, groups like that, and they would not partake in that. But those groups, how they would describe themselves is they're sort of, so much of the world's poverty and unemployment and pressure on environmental resources are the result of overpopulation, and that we really have to put a brake on population growth if we're going to resolve these other problems. A lot of them are absolutely paranoid about subversion. They're worried about rebellions and revolutions coming out of the lower classes, even when there really isn't any evidence that these things are in the works. They're constantly concerned about that. Their explanation of crime is almost entirely based on the theory of its overpopulation, all sorts of urban issues like overcrowded transit, inadequate housing. All of these issues they blame on overpopulation. Their real main concern is that as we go forward, the market demand for labor is actually going to stagnate, if not retrench, due to automation and things like that. And if the laboring classes, if the bottom 40% continue to have lots of kids, large families, there is going to be this massive political and criminal problem at some point in the future. That's really the mindset at the core of this movement, that they really think that most of the social problems that we are facing today are the result of overpopulation. They're deathly afraid of, it connects to land conservation quite a bit, because they think as populations increase, people keep looking around and thinking, well, why don't we expand the agricultural sector into the wilderness? Why don't we expand the cities into the agricultural sector? And that's one thing that this community is dead set against. They also believe that there's this expand and explode phenomenon internationally, and that if countries like China and India, etc., were allowed to really grow their populations as much as they would like to, this would build political pressures for those countries to expand overseas.
They've
got a whole litany of fears.
Yeah, we got a break, but I'm glad you brought that up, because I read somewhere here not too long ago that as far as the population is concerned, if you took all the livable land mass on the planet and divided everybody up, you wouldn't see anybody. You'd see one person mile or two. There would be one person. So there's plenty of room for people. So let's talk about that a little bit, because I think expanding into unpopulated areas is definitely an option.
And for all those people who think that the world can't handle all the people, blah, 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 we have a special song for them. And we'll be back with our guest, William Kay. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
They're like a music man.
Hold your ground.
I'm all right.
We're going to the end of the line.
All right.
Because, William, I'm assuming that this also includes this whole new movement to euthanize old people.
Yes.
That's all part of it. That song was for the old people. Like us.
All this sort of safe fixing sites, needle exchanges, all that sort of stuff. There's a real dark side to the population control movement. That's where they increase mortality. I focus in this book almost exclusively on the suppression of fertility. When you get into the increased mortality stuff, like euthanasia, that would be, you know, then you really sort of, they're even more secretive. And a lot of that information would not be available, and you're never going to get the real sort of smoking gun information to prove that. But I'm quite convinced, and I used to be an activist way back in the day promoting things like safe fixing sites and that, but I'm now quite convinced that that is a campaign to increase mortality. It is really knocking off people, and it's killing people like flies.
And so people understand the safe fixing sites, that's where they go. They go there to use drugs because it's, quote, safer.
The government will provide services. They'll give you the needle. They'll give you, they won't give you the dope.
Haters.
Exactly. What kind of a party is that?
What's up with that?
But they, I can tell you that in Vancouver, you were speaking to the person who set up Canada's first safe fixing site. I used to be very involved in this movement. I used to get lots of money from various foundations to establish it. We ran it for about a year. And now looking back on it now, what a sinister thing that is. And a lot of the money does come from George Soros and groups like that. And, you know, they did a study in Vancouver. Remember, they were doing the study while I was there. They were monitoring the health of 600 female injection drug users. And over the course of the 5 years of the study, 70 of them died.
Ew. Yeah, that's...
The mortality rate of an injection drug user is 50 times higher than another person. Those women were in their 20s. Typically, women in the 20s, they're not dying like flies. No. Those women were. And I saw that. You know, if you're an injection, I've never used an injection drug, never will. And what I saw was people who started could never quit. And there's 101 health complications to that. And just like they did with abortion, you know, they legalized it and they destigmatized it. So it became sort of a normal, okay thing to do. That is what they are doing with injection drug use, with all these safe fixing sites and needle exchanges and their campaigns and what have you. They are destigmatizing it.
Well, it's the same thing. So I think Canada now is, what, the second nation on the planet that is legalizing marijuana nationally, recreational marijuana. We'll see how that's going to work out.
October the 17th?
Yeah, see how that's going to work out for them. So that'll be a
disaster. I'm quite convinced of it.
I agree.
I'm glad you remembered that.
That's a website called Popular Technology, and they've got a database of 150 medical journal articles about the harmful effects of marijuana. I used to smoke marijuana. Don't smoke it anymore. It is addictive. It is very harmful to your health, and it really messes with your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it causes sort of mild forms of psychosis. This is going to be a disaster in Canada.
Yeah.
And have you guys been having, like we did here in the States, you know, we had all these, you know, we have medical marijuana, you know, just as far as
it's
I'm concerned,
hoax.
Fake. And then it morphed itself into recreation. Is Canada just going, just throwing down and giving up on the whole thing rather than go through those steps? Or?
Well, once again, you have to take a look back, you know, how sinister are these people? I mean, Justin Trudeau's father, he was a fascist. You know, I can link him to three or four outright, explicit fascist organizations.
No, I didn't know that.
Justin Trudeau's father used to stockpile weapons in his mansion because they were planning to seize all the police stations in Montreal. They were extreme Laurentian. That was during World War II when Justin Trudeau's father was an ardent supporter of the Axis powers.
Wow. I'll be darned, I didn't know that.
There's a huge sort of this French-English thing going on. And not only was his group, you know, planning to seize Montreal by power during World War II, the St. Lawrence Seaway, there was naval battles. You know, the Nazis had U-boats going up and down the St. Lawrence Sea, like 100 kilometers away from Quebec City. Trudeau and that whole crew, on two occasions, they mobilized large gangs of men, steel helmets, went up and down major streets in Montreal, destroyed all the Jewish shops. They did that 2 or 3 years after Kristallnacht. That was Justin Trudeau's father did that.
Well, damn, not Nazis.
And Nazis.
Nazis, yeah.
Who could have seen that coming here? I was thinking he was just zipping his pants on the side.
They were the Vichy government.
Wow.
Okay, the first thing Justin Trudeau did when he got power was declare martial law. I was 10 years old when it happened. I remember that.
Really?
You know, they had the helicopters all over Ottawa. They had tanks rolling down Ottawa streets. I remember that. This happened in Canada. You know, 700 people got arrested in the middle of the night, dragged off to secret detention centers, no lawyers, no phone calls. That happened in Canada. I remember that. That was Pierre Trudeau did that.
Hmm.
Wow, and they elected this one? Did people forget? Do you guys have the same media we do?
Yeah,
they just rewrite history?
Sort of thing, you know, half the politicians in Canada are children of politicians. Justin is a dunce. Justin is,
obviously.
He's got, you know, important backers behind him, that whole sort of constituency. There's a lot of sort of old money, Montreal, Quebec City crowd that really, you know, they love Pierre, they love Justin. But, you know, well, keep in mind, the Trudeaus are very wealthy people. Like, Pierre's father wasn't that wealthy, but he set up a chain of gasoline stations that he sold to the Rockefellers, Imperial Oil, back in the early 1930s for many millions of dollars. So the family's very wealthy. And they're sort of this trust fund, rich kid type people, but they really have a contempt for the lower classes in general and for the English-speaking lower classes in particular.
No wonder Trump pisses him off so much. Oh, my God. No wonder Donald Trump pisses him off so much. I mean, that's like the embodiment of everything that shouldn't happen.
Yep, they're quite different people, I must say. But back to the sort
explains
of marijuana legalization.
Yeah,
I mean, looking down upon the masses, I don't think they really care. You know, it's going to be a great way to sort of narcotize and discombobulate people. It's undoubtedly going to be a medical disaster.
Yeah.
You're going to see a lot of people in the early teens smoking pot that probably would not otherwise have been doing it. There's also this whole synthetic marijuana thing that's happening. A lot of these synthetic marijuanas that are extremely powerful. Google, go to Britain, London, And some of these synthetic marijuanas are called Spice and K2 in that. What they've done is they've created something very similar to THC, and they can spray it on marijuana, and it is just absolutely turning people into zombies. That's going to happen big time here if they legalize marijuana. Now, it's going to be a disaster, but I don't think that sort of the Trudeau crowd, the Laurentian elites, give a rat's ass about the bulk of the population here anyways. And this is sort of popular. And it's a money grab for the government, for sure. It's going to be heavily taxed. But
see, they've already proven that the whole tax thing's not going to work. It's, you know, when you legalize it, people are going to grow their own. There isn't going to be a huge tax increase like
Very
good point. The black market isn't going to go away.
No. That's exactly it.
No.
You still have a big black market.
They're going to compete with this market.
Yeah.
All of them are going to try to get more customers going. And also, you got to, whatever money they are going to make in the taxes, they're going to have to look at, you know, it's going to be increased, you know, problems in education and medicine and highway traffic fatalities. There's a downside to this ledger as well, which I don't think they care that much about. It's an experiment. It's a sort of it's a relinquishment. We'll see how it turns out. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a disaster, but then we'll never get clear statistics on the nature of the disaster. So it'll be a very long time before the truth out.
Mm-hmm.
Before you can write us a new ebook so we can learn about it?
Ebook, Justin Trudeau's campaign to narcotize Canadian youth.
I like it.
I like it. Yeah.
Well, it's not going to be the next one.
Okay. I feel like every time we have you on, all we talk about is the next project, right? What's coming next? What's coming next? So at the end of the day, back to population control.
Yes.
At the end of the day, who does all the stuff? I mean, if they is this okay? I guess I want to rephrase my question. Very much like the eco movement, you have the whole like true believers. You got the Earth First guys that sit in the tree, that don't shave, that just sit around and braid each other's armpit hair, and that whole thing. They're not obviously the brains of the operation.
No, they're not.
So you have this wide swath of useful idiots who run around and promote this stuff. Meanwhile, you have Al Gore flying around in a jet. And, you know, living in a giant house, running air conditioning and all that. So you always have the upper guys that are not even connected. I mean, you look at Humane Society of the United States, and HSUS doesn't spend its money on, you know, puppies and kitties. They spend all their money, you know, with the mob and a bunch of other stuff. So what's going on with the population control guys?
Who's the controlling mind of this? Is that what we're getting at here?
Yeah.
Like, who is the actual directors of the movement?
Yeah.
One place to stop. Keep in mind, it is a social movement. This is not an organization. This is an armada of thousands of organizations, which by definition doesn't have a central headquarters. The really big players, I would recommend there's a one organization online called the Funders for Reproductive Equity. And they began in 1996. That organization itself is not that powerful, only has 3 or 4 employees. But what they do is organize conferences for a lot of the leading philanthropists within the population control movement to have private meetings. It's very similar to the Environmental Grantmakers Association. The organization itself isn't powerful, but it does bring together hundreds of the major players 2 or 3 times a year. The Funders for Reproductive Equity was founded by the Ford Foundation, the Hewlett Foundation, the Rockefellers, MacArthurs, a lot of those families. So if you look at sort of the board of directors of the Rockefeller Brothers Fund and both the Hewlett and the Packard families, although they're quite independent, and neither of them own any shares in HP anymore, very wealthy families and very involved in this. So if I was looking out for a sort of a controlling mind, I would start with that community. It would be the boards of directors and the trustees of the leading philanthropic organizations. More like the real directors of it would be the senior executives within the foreign aid bureaucracies. It would be the senior executives within the monster organizations like Planned Parenthood of America, the International Planned Parenthood Association, Mary Stopes International, which runs over 600 abortion clinics around the world, the senior executives in that, and there you would find some serious true believers there. And like I say, none of those organizations are wholly dependent on any single source of money. Another key component of the elite are the big pharmaceutical manufacturers. Bayer, Pfizer, these companies have dozens of products, from contraception pills to morning after pills, et cetera, that they put on the market. They always have subsidiaries that are engaged in liaising with the big foundations and the big foreign aid bureaucracies and what have you. It's a fairly tight group there again. But even if one was to list, you know, the boards of directors and the senior executives of the top 60 or 70 organizations, you're already dealing with, you know, several hundred to a thousand people. True, you know,
wow.
Those people, they know each other, believe me, at this point, but they, there's no central control. There are some people who are definitely profiting from it. Most of them are politically motivated. But a lot of these people, this is an old movement. People have been involved in this movement for a very long time.
Sure, and you just get enough little pieces of this. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. But I'm going to post this Founders for Reproductive Equity. Gosh, what could go wrong?
Okay.
A dynamic network committed to the bold and effective philanthropy for reproductive health rights and, of course, justice. Because everything is about justice. You're listening to We the People. We're kind of snarky on this whole thing. But you can find all our snarky information at wethepeopleradio.us.
Something going there.
Hey, look, I had a lot of Billy Joel songs and they seemed to all fit. So I did a lot of Billy Joel songs for today. This will encourage Bill to help me with the music. That's how you do it. You just have all the songs by one artist.
Yeah.
But hey, it's about population control. So you know what? You got a 50-50 chance of sticking around, buddy. Oh, all right, William.
Yes.
What are we missing?
I just wanted to profile a certain member of the elite population control realm.
Oh, please do.
Are you ready to receive this information?
No,
okay.
No, I'm not.
All systems go.
I want to change my answer. I'm not now.
Break for a message. Okay. The person's name is Urvashi Vaid.
Oh, yeah.
Does that ring any bells?
Oh, yeah, I know Irv.
at least you could tell it was a female. I wouldn't have even known that much.
Oh,
okay.
Bill had a 50-50
well,
shot.
You have heard of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they run 650 abortion clinics around the United States. There are 1,671 abortion clinics in the United States. A third of them are run by Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood has an overall budget of about $1.1 billion. It gets money from the government, but not for abortions. It gets most of the patients pay for their own abortions. It does get over a third of its budget from charitable donations from the big philanthropists and what have you. They're sitting on almost $2 billion in assets around the country. It's a 100-year-old organization. Margaret Sanger and others helped found it. You know, she's the one that wanted to lock up 1/6 of the American population in sterilization camps. People she referred to as the morons. Anyways,
lovely.
Wow. That was in 1932. She gave a public address. She did a lot of speaking to the auxiliaries of the Ku Klux Klan. This is one of her favorite speeches, which she then turned into an article. You can get it online. It's in the book. But, yeah, she wanted 1/6 of the American population incarcerated in concentration camps where they would be compelled to have sterilizations, et cetera. That's the founder of Planned Parenthood. Now, within Planned Parenthood, there's a subsidiary called the Planned Parenthood Action Fund, Incorporated. And it is their political activist arm, sort of a PAC type of thing. It's called PPF Incorporated. Overall, Planned Parenthood spends $350 million a year on political activism. Mobilizations, parades, lobbying, advocacy, lawsuits, what have you. $350 million a year. And Urvashi Vaid is more or less the person in charge of that. She's certainly in charge of the action fund, which spends most of this money.
Is she an American?
She was born, I believe, in the United States. She first comes to prominence in the early 1980s. She organized the lesbian action group within her law school. Before she joined Planned Parenthood, she worked for the Ford Foundation for 5 years and then several other big foundations and lesbian organizations. She's authored or edited 4 books dealing with lesbianism, and she's the executive director of the Lesbian Political Action Committee. Now, amongst Planned Parenthood's activism, they organize over 2,000 events a year, and she's the field marshal in charge of this. Their emphasis on recruiting young women. They have established 300 campus clubs. They're called the Generation Active Campus Clubs. They have 300 of them across the United States, all designed to recruit young women. They had one specific blitz last year called I Defy. Like sort of, it was to recruit young female activists, and they recruited 150,000 young female activists to participate in this.
Recruit them for what?
To promote Planned Parenthood.
Promote Planned Parenthood?
Promote abortion, lesbianism, what have you. This is, in my mind, indubitably, this is the executive director of the Lesbian Political Action Committee, and she is spending $350 million a year recruiting young women. Like, they've got 300 campus clubs now.
Mm.
And it shows you the scale of that. Also, Planned Parenthood is the America's largest provider of sex education materials. There's linked up with this other group that does the K-12 stuff. They also fund a lot of university sex education stuff. Their sex education budget alone, Planned Parenthood, is $50 million a year.
Wow.
Just to influence sexual behavior of the American public. I'm bringing that out just to bring a couple of points. You know, the fact that the whole LGBT thing is a subsidiary of the population control movement, and just the scale of what this movement is operating.
Yeah, no great surprise then what we're seeing. We have a caller online. We have Bob, who is either, I don't know, ask you a question or comment. Hey, Bob. Hello.
Uh-oh. Did we lose Bob?
What about Bob?
What about Bob? Bob is...
Bob is...
You do know this, Bob.
Well, you got a really bad connection, Bob.
Bob is in the cone of silence at the moment.
Are you still there, Bobby, on a cell phone?
Here, we're going to put you back in the cone of silence. You can talk to Ashley on the phone, and if you guys can figure it out, we'll try that again. All right. As you were, William.
Yes.
Continue on. We'll talk amongst ourselves while Bob gets his connection figured out.
Well, what aspect of this phenomenon should we move to next?
I'll tell
you something extremely interesting.
Yes, that would be good.
And this is in the dark, dark corner. The name of the book is From Malthus to Mifepristone, which I now mispronounced. Mifepristone, which is an abortifacient pharmaceutical. It was developed by the Russell U. Kloof Laboratories 40 years ago. It was used to be called RU486, RU for the Russell U. Kloof. The patent was owned by the Horst Chemical Company out of Germany, but they were run by Catholics and they did not want any part of mass abortion. So our old friends at the Population Council took over all the patents and rights for this pharmaceutical. They continue to have a monopoly on that drug in the United States. They are probably performing 300,000 or 400,000 abortions with that drug every year. They created a subsidiary called Danco Laboratories. It's a very secretive company. It's got its pill press somewhere on Manhattan, and they are cranching these things out.
Also, it's a pill form you take to induce. It's a pill?
It's a pill that induces abortions. Most of the abortions in Britain now are done through mifepristone. About a third of them in the United States are done through mifepristone. Usually it's a combination of drugs. There's another one that does not nearly work as well called misoprostol. But there's been a revolution in abortion. In most countries, now in most first world countries, your first stop are these pills that induce abortion. And in the United States, the main one is mifepristone. It's marketed as Mifeplex by Danco Laboratories. You can go to Danco Laboratories. It doesn't have a website. Wiki has a one-paragraph, two-paragraph section on them. Very secretive company. Planned Parenthood charges $500 a pill from this, and that Danco has a monopoly, and they sell 300,000 or 400,000 pills a year in the United States. That's just the beginning of it.
Well, hold that thought, William. We've got to take a break,
yeah,
but I want to talk more about that. That's a scary one.
That's a super scary one. And I guess Bob got his connection figured out. So all of that and more when we come back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Funny you should ask, Al.
I'd say, hold me something tall and strong, make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only 12:30, but I don't care. Hold me something tall and strong, make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only 12:30. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah, and I'll tell you where, Bill, who's complaining about my song. It's almost 5 o'clock at William's house.
There you go.
No, it isn't. It's only 3 o'clock, almost 3 o'clock here. You'd have to go to Ontario to find 5 o'clock.
I'm
in Mountain Standard Time.
Oh, I thought you were all the way over there.
We're only 1 hour ahead of you guys.
Really? Oh, I thought you were way over on the other side.
No.
I always have you in French Canada.
A couple of months, it won't matter.
They will tell time
in Canada in a few more months.
That's true. It'll all be relative.
Everybody's
yeah,
smoking, dude. So, let's
420 somewhere.
That's right. 420 somewhere.
Good one.
So, anyway, let's talk about these drugs.
We got limited time here. This takes me a while to set this one up.
Okay, go ahead.
The Population Council is an organization headquartered Manhattan, downtown. It was founded by John D. Rockefeller III in 1952. Real hardcore eugenicists all around. One of their subsidiaries, this is an organization, the Population Council, still has an annual budget of over $80 million a year. One of their subsidiaries is the International Committee on Contraceptive Research. They developed most of the commercial IUDs that are on the market now. The group boasts of saying there's over 170 million women right now in the world with one of their IUDs installed inside them. Another spin-off of the Population Council was Danco Laboratories, which holds exclusive U.S. rights to the pharmaceutical abortifacient mifepristone. Now, they don't own it. They say there's a network of investors long involved in the population control movement. The only one I could really find out about was the Packard family, seems to be investors in Danco Laboratories. But it's not a very big outfit. I mean, they buy the product bulk from China, and what they have in Manhattan, Danco's also located in Manhattan. They won't reveal the address, but it's at the pill press and bottling facility, and they supply the entire American market with the number one abortifacient pharmaceutical in America.
Made in China.
Here's where it gets interesting. Around the world, in a lot of really strict Catholic countries, in Islamic countries, there's an enormous black market for these pharmaceutical abortifacients. One pill goes for $100 in Rio de Janeiro. And if you look, if you sort of read around the topic, you realize that this is a billion-dollar industry supplying the black market. They're called abortifacients, pills that cause abortions. There's two main ones, misoprostol and mifepristone. They're usually taken together. The misoprostol is the cheap one. It only works about half the time. There's a real danger of the fetus surviving and being severely retarded. If you take the two of them together, over 95% likelihood that you will abort the fetus if it's done in the first 10 weeks, and there's huge demand. But you start doing the math, and this is a billion-dollar market, and there's really nothing stopping Danco Laboratories, which is this super secretive company, from supplying these other parts of the world. There's another player in this. It's an investment house also in downtown Manhattan called the D.E. Shaw Group. And it was founded by a biochemist and a doctor called Dr. E. Shaw. And they now have assets worth $47 billion. And they claim they have this sort of special, you know, algorithms they use to play the stock markets and what have you. It all sounds very bogus. They put out an announcement a couple of years ago that they don't want any new investors. They've got enough money. The Population Council, which is sort of the control, that has the patent on mifepristone, its executive director is also the managing director of D.E. Shaw. So there's a very tight network of people there. But I'm starting to look at this network and thinking, you know, these guys are probably making $1 billion a year supplying the black markets in Abu Dhabi, in Cairo. There's a lot of upper-class people there that, you know, if their daughter or mistress gets pregnant, they want these pills, right? They want to take care of this problem as quick as possible. There's a huge market there. And there's absolutely nothing stopping these guys in Manhattan. And all of these, you know, the Population Council is like two blocks away from the headquarters of D.E. Shaw. No one will tell you where Danco Laboratories is other than it's somewhere downtown Manhattan. But this is a very tight network of people. And these guys, this is a world of, you know, private jets and private yachts. There's nothing stopping Danco Laboratories from shipping out large volumes of pills to, say, South Africa. That would be legal. But, of course, they would never get to South Africa. They would end up in the Philippines or Pakistan or somewhere where an abortion is tightly restricted.
Right.
So I started really triangulating on this. I could almost make a list of the people. There's a syndicate in Manhattan of people who were doing this. And I decided I better not post that or put that in a book. You know, the bikers say you can be right and you can be dead right.
Yeah.
But I pretty well, you could triangulate. There's a syndicate there that is supplying the black market abortifacient needs of a lot of Catholic and Islamic countries, and it's a huge industry.
Are they active domestically as well, or is this primarily going overseas?
No, Danco supplies all of the mifepristone in the United States. They have a monopoly.
Oh, boy.
They own own the patent. The patent was given to them by Horsch, because Horsch did not want to be in the abortion business. But there's probably 20 pharmaceutical contraceptive products, mostly IUDs, hormones, that the Population Council owns the patent of. And then they lease it out to various pharmaceutical manufacturing companies. A chunk of their $80 million annual budget comes from royalties on these products that they have the license to. But they are the exclusive supplier of mifepristone, which is the number one abortifacient pharmaceutical in the United States. They would be selling, you know, 300,000 or 400,000 of those pills, which Planned Parenthood charges $500 for.
Holy cow. So that's a drug you could go.
It's big business.
Yeah, you could go to your doctor and get that prescribed in this country as easily as they ship it overseas and sell it over there.
They probably don't make quite as much. Like, you know, what I read was $100 a pill in Rio de Janeiro, like sort of the upper classes of the Islamic world. Yeah, they'd be spending that kind of money, and they would be this. Who's ever supplying that market? They're probably selling, millions upon millions of pills a year. This stuff is worth probably $50,000 a pound.
Yeah, it's just amazing. There's that big of a market developed for a product like that.
Well, if you're pushing that kind of thing, and so at the end,
there's long been a demand for it, particularly amongst sort of upper crust men who have mistresses and daughters and what have you that get pregnant. They want to take care of this. There was always a black market abortion industry out there. Long before abortion was legalized in the United States, there were society doctors who, for a hefty fee, would take care of the problems. So when you had the mass effort to legalize abortion in the United States, it wasn't about, you know, getting abortion access to the upper classes. It was about making abortions available to the lower classes. The upper crust already had access to abortion. And you would have that phenomenon already going on in the Islamic and in the staunch Catholic world. And increasingly, abortions are done with pharmaceuticals. Like I say, most of the abortions in the UK now are done with pharmaceuticals. America's sort of a bit behind the lines. Some countries have been very slow to legalize these drugs, but they will ultimately take over the whole market.
Well, I'm guessing that one of the side effects of this, if they were really built making the drugs correctly, would be that in certain percentage, I'm sure they say it's low, it probably creates sterilization.
More so with the IUDs and a lot of these injectable pharmaceuticals. That's one of the untold stories of this.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I list a whole bunch of gynecologists who come up with these incredible statements. There's a lot of gynecologists who are passionate believers in population control. Mm-hmm. And that's why they became gynecologists. And there's one famous comment from the 1960s when they were doing a lot of the early experimentation with modern IUDs. And what they were finding was a lot of, they were doing experiments on like 15,000 women at a time.
Totally.
Usually
can.
In the third world. And these were just nightmares. I mean, they were ruining these women's lives.
Oh, sure.
You know, perforated uteruses and severe infections and what have you. And he made this comment that, look, in most scenarios, the side effect is she's sterilized. We want them to be sterilized. So what do we care?
Right.
I think that a lot of these modern pharmaceutical contraceptives are causing sterilizations. I personally know two women who were unwittingly sterilized by modern pharmaceuticals. I think it is absolutely rampant.
Yeah, that's...
The Dalkon Shield, 200,000 American women sued for damage. A lot of them were sterilized. That wasn't an IUD, but it was another example of a modern pharmaceutical contraceptive product that had just disastrous results.
Unbelievable.
The controlling minds, they want to sterilize these women.
Of course they do.
As far as they're concerned, that's a bonus.
And then we get to save the Earth. Isn't that tidy? So tidy.
Yeah, amazing information.
Our guest has been William Kay from Canada, apparently only an hour away from us. Who knew? And I'm sure we will have him back. You can find all of his information on WeThePeopleRadio.us. His website is ecofascism.com. And we will see you next week. We're talking about immigration and stuff. Thank you, William.
Bye-bye.
Bye.